I'm Rodrigo Blankenship, and you're listening to the Savage Pads Podcast.
Welcome to the Savage Pads Podcast, part of the UGASports.com podcast network. I'm your host, Doug Battle, and in this week's episode, Davin Bellamy returns to discuss his thoughts on JT Daniels, the temptation to transfer when Davin was an underutilized underclassman, and his decision to forego the NFL draft for a shot at a special season in 2017, as well as his thoughts on UGA players currently making decisions as to whether they will stick around for their senior year. Great segment with Davin. Always a pleasure to speak with him. Then Corey Amick returns to the show for the weekly Pick Six segment. Corey made a little comeback last week with his picks. So we're talking the six biggest games in college football, as well as the Georgia-South Carolina game. We've also got some free Chick-fil-A at the Alps Road location in Athens to give away to our listeners. Simply follow us on Twitter and retweet the tweet promoting this episode for your chance to win. Go Dawgs.
Practice every day.
Man oh man, mano a mano.
He definitely sticks out, reminds me of myself. As close as we have right now to Roquan.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job of bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Aaron Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I was famous. He was onside.
Everybody respects his specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pats Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle, coming at you from my hometown of Birmingham, Alabama, for a little Thanksgiving week episode. But we've got Davin Bellamy on the line. Davin, you've been like somewhat active on Twitter during the season, as far as like it seems like you're keeping up with things pretty well. And you tweeted something positive about JT Daniels this last week. What are your thoughts on JT? He's obviously the talk in Athens right now. What are your thoughts on his debut performance against Mississippi State?
Honestly, it was really surprising. I actually knew about him when he committed to USC. I don't know how I came across his name. But when we got him, I thought it was a good addition. I didn't know why he was playing at first, but I'm pretty sure Coach Smart is down in that. But, yeah. I mean, it was just kind of a brush of fresh air, because I feel like the SEC is kind of changing. It's not too much 17-10 games anymore. We're going to have to be able to push the ball downfield and kind of be able to get in the scoring frenzy with some of these teams, because that's just the way that football is being played now. So to see that was refreshing, especially with the running game not really taking off like everyone thought it would. And he just throws a pretty ball, man. He throws a pretty ball. He has a nice quick release. He has pocket presence. He's smooth. He's just a smooth quarterback, man. And I really enjoy watching him, man. It was like a brush of fresh air for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think a lot of fans share that sentiment. But a lot of people have questioned Kirby's roster management at that position due to some events that unfolded even during your time at UGA. There's a lot of fans who feel that JT was able and maybe should have been on the field before the Dogs took on Florida. And I was just curious, Davin, having played at Georgia and under many of the coaches that are on the staff, how confident are you that the right decisions have been made at the quarterback position under Kirby Smart this season?
I'm very confident, simply for the fact because, so when I was there, it was the Jacob Eason, Jake Fromm situation.
Yeah.
If we look at how Coach Smart handled that, he rode with the hot hand.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's like I hear a lot with NFL coaches now. It's not about just having 53 good players. It's about having the right 53.
Yeah.
So as far as like going with the hot hand, that's where the chemistry is with the team. You know, that quarterback is the one looking the lineman in their eyes during the huddle. You know, those guys get used to him. And it's really just riding the hot hand, I feel like. And we fast forward to this year, you know, it kind of was the same thing. You know, Stetson came in and saved the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just riding that chemistry, you know, riding that magic until it came to a head. And then that's when we had to make some decisions. But just on how he handled our situation, which led us to a national championship, you know, just riding that hot hand.
Yeah, I don't know. With JT, it just seems like there's probably more to it as far as why he wasn't on the field regarding his health and how he was performing coming off an injury. So I'm sure that had something more to do with it. But you tweeted at some point kind of advocating for Dwan to see more snaps. And I know now there's a lot of speculation as to whether he'll switch positions or whether he'll stick around at Georgia or go play quarterback somewhere else. Dwan Mathis obviously is a guy that has some fantastic athletic ability, and he's just raw. What are your thoughts on him moving forward? Do you think he's someone that switches positions, or do you think his future's at the quarterback position, whether it's at Georgia or via transfer to some other school?
Honestly, when I first watched him, I went to a practice, I think it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was kind of the not big name quarterback. And I watched him, and like I said, he's a very fluent athlete.
Yeah.
I think he throws a pretty ball. I think he has good mechanics. Before I saw what JT Daniels could do, I thought he was still injured. I advocated for Dwan because I feel like the first game, you know, he didn't start off too hot, but we didn't let him, I feel like, fight through that.
Yeah.
And get all his nerves out.
Yeah.
And I feel like we benched him quick and then we just throw him in against Florida. I don't think I didn't think that was fair, you know, after being benched and not being able to make mistakes and fight through them to get better. He was benched, and then it was like, come save the day against Florida, who we now see as a national championship contending team.
Right.
I think that was tough. And but I do think, man, that he can play the quarterback position. And I know a lot of guys, you know, are fast to jump and transfer. You know, and I think a guy like him, man, patience can be the best thing. Especially if we look at Stetson's situation, you know, even though he left, you know, he still had to be patient. And even though he didn't expect it, you know, his time came. I just feel like with Dwan, man, he still has a lot of work to do in grooming himself as a quarterback, the reads, you know, just all those things. And I think staying in Georgia would benefit him. As far as the mental side of the game, instead of just going somewhere and playing and not really being able to get the best coach that he can get.
Yeah.
Not going to play a quarterback for another school, that'll probably be a lower level or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. So for you, I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation because you were starting a little bit earlier in your career. But you did come in. I know you were kind of recruited by Todd Grantham, and I'm sure they were in your head telling you were going to be the next Jarvis Jones. And then you get there, and there's guys like Leonard Floyd, and you're having to learn under some different guys and having to learn patience, kind of like the situation you're in now. What, you know, as a player, how are you able to be patient when you feel like you're an elite talent and you feel like, man, I could probably start for most schools that we play against? What keeps you at the University of Georgia? What keeps you focused on your job there for that team?
So when I was younger at Georgia, my mindset was, man, I remember I was telling everybody, man, I want to get the hell out of here, man. Like,
yeah.
I know I can play. I know I can play, man. I'm trying to transfer. I'm finna get up out of here.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm kind of in that same situation now. But I kind of feel like the difference is when you put your pride to the side.
Yeah.
And you realize that, you know, you're at that point in your life for a reason. So in college, what made me a better player was, okay, I'm behind Leonard Floyd and Jordan Jenkins for 2.5 years, and I'm watching everything that they do.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm literally watching everything that they do, and they don't even notice how closely I'm watching them. So when it's, and I try to copy what they do, that I work for me, and I copy what Jordan do that I could do, I copy what Leonard do that I can do, and then I put it into my game. So now when those guys leave and you're thrown into the fire, you know, you've made yourself such a better player.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the product that's on the field is a product that has been 2 years of watching great players ahead of you, you know, picking their brain. So now when it's your turn, so like my first season starting, I was able to have a great season after Leonard and Jordan left.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because I took a little bit of what Jordan did, I took a little bit of what Leonard did, and I put it in my game. I think that's the same thing kind of with how I am now. You know, I know I can play. I know the plays I've made. But now I'm just being patient, you know. And
mm-hmm.
When it's my time, you know, I've played with Javion Clowney, J.J. Watt, Whitney Merciless, and I've taken all those little bit of what they've told me, and I've watched them the same way. So when it's my time, you know, you'll see a little bit of this, you'll see a little bit of that on top of my game. So I just think the thing is just putting pride to the side and always finding a way to get better. Like I tell guys, like, even if you're on scout team, you take every scout rep like it's your last rep. And at the end of the year, you've taken over 1,000 reps that you try to do to perfection. So now when it's time for you to not be on scout team and now you're finally there on Saturday nights, you know, you're a better football player. So, I mean, that's kind of basically what it is, man. I don't want to be too long-winded.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it seems like you have an opinion on how players should handle the urge to transfer. What about the urge to leave early? I know every year we've got guys that are kind of on the fence. I know you were one of those guys after your junior year. You, Lorenzo, Nick, and Sony, among others, decided to come back. This year we've had a guy like Richard LeCount, who definitely could be playing in the NFL right now, come back. And he's obviously suffered an injury recently outside of football. But how do you weigh that decision? And what advice would you give to some of this year's Georgia Bulldogs who maybe have a chance to do what you did your senior year, you know, coming off a little bit of a disappointing season, as opposed to just going straight to the NFL?
Well, like I say, now that I'm in now, the position I am now and the age I am now,
yeah.
And I look back on it, if I would have left my junior year, I probably would have got drafted.
Yeah.
So it's a yin and a yang thing. You know, the longer you stay, the more film they get on you, the more things people can say about you, you know,
uh-huh.
Because the draft is, they just find reasons not to give you money. You know?
Right.
I mean, just to be honest. So the longer you stay, you know, you do give them more chance to find more things, more weaknesses and more negative things and more red flags. So that's where it's kind of like yin and yang for me, because right, if I leave my junior year, I forgot where we were, 8-6, 8-5 or something like that. I leave my junior year, I get drafted, but we're 8-5 and whatever our record was, and go from being a solid Georgia player to senior year, you know, you have a better year than you had your junior year, you don't get drafted, and then but your team goes to the national championship and you live in the hearts of people forever.
Yeah.
So that's where you kind of got to find that balance. But I would definitely, to be honest with you, I would tell guys, man, like, for me, it's hard to tell somebody to make. It's hard for me to tell someone what decision to make.
Yeah.
When in reality, they're just going to follow their heart. You know, we felt like as a whole, we knew what type of team that we could have our senior year. We knew that we kept losing these games our junior year by Hail Marys. Last minute drives.
Yeah, I remember that.
We just knew like these. Yeah, we just knew like these teams, they're not better than us. We just keep finding a way to lose.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when we looked at everybody who could potentially come back, and it was just like, all right, you could literally have 11 NFL players on defense and the best backfield in Georgia history. You know, it was just like everybody wanted to come back. So I feel like for the players now, it's kind of judging that also. I mean, you can look around the locker room and kind of tell what type of team you got. Like, when we looked around that locker room that senior year, we knew that it wasn't too many people that could beat us when we walked on the field. So that gave you a lot of confidence to come back. But that's the question that the player has to ask when he looked around the locker room or the Zob around the locker room, you know. Is it worth coming back my senior season? Do we really have a chance to win this national championship? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you hadn't come back, there's no Notre Dame strip sack, Auburn strip sack. I mean, I know.
For sure. It's not. That's what I'm saying.
For Georgia fans, they certainly appreciate it. From a career standpoint, I can understand, though, you know, not being able to tell guys what to do, because there is that other side where there's certainly money to be made in the NFL, and it's almost like the more of a known commodity you become, it's almost like the unknown is valuable to NFL scouts. Like, they want someone they know has upside where they haven't necessarily seen any of their flaws yet. And the more college football you play, the less of that there is. But Georgia's in a situation now, like defensively, where they've got a handful of guys kind of like you that have that potential to go pro, potential to stay. We've had elite defenses under Kirby since you left, even. We've had elite running backs, elite lines, elite wide receivers. The one thing that's been missing has been quarterback. And as we addressed earlier, it seems like JT Daniels has the opportunity. We've only seen one game, but he has the opportunity to be the guy that ends the quarterback curse or whatnot. But in a game where where Georgia finally got its first 400-yard passer in 7 years, all of a sudden the Georgia defense no longer looked so dominant. What's your opinion on that as far as what's going on with this Georgia defense and why maybe a more dynamic offense leads to more points given up on the other side of the ball?
Well, I mean, first, I give it to, you know, first, I want to say, man, the outside linebackers that they have now, man, those dudes are bad, man.
Yeah. Like, the new Wolfpack.
I mean, these dudes' moves, they're so ahead of the game. Like, Azeed with the stab chop, and then the Anderson kid, I seen him dip one time.
Yeah.
And then Jermaine Johnson, we was actually working on this move in the summer, but his cross chop move, has gotten him like 2 sacks, and these guys are just so ahead of their time.
Yeah.
And Zola's talking about it. But I think, you know, to answer your question, it goes back to what Nick Saban said, I feel like, just a couple of weeks ago, how, you know, it's not football, period. It's starting to become a points thing. So even in the SEC, we're used to just smash mouth football in 10-3 games or 17-10. That's just not realistic for football no more. You know, even Nick Saban said that dominant defenses don't win national championships anymore.
Right.
You got to be able to put points up.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you're going to give up more points, if you're not running the ball and draining the clock and wearing the other team down, your defense is getting like 5 to 7 minutes on the sideline. But if you're scoring like we were scoring last Saturday, where you're just taking the top off the defense back up in 3 to 4 plays.
Yeah.
So that causes, you know what I'm saying, fatigue and other things like that. But I kind of just think it's going on with how the game is transforming to where if you don't score 24 or, you know what I'm saying, or 30 points, you know, you may not win, even in the NFL. And then and just some scoring quicker, has our defense on the field more.
Right.
And these other offenses, man, they got the same message too, man. You know, all these other offenses, man, it's all you see now is kind of spread, RPO, take the shot, try to take the top off, man. Like, a lot of these offenses are getting very aggressive, man.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back even to 2017, like Notre Dame, that was a 20-17 game. There's very few games, especially against a ranked opponent, where 20 points is going to get it done nowadays. So football certainly changed. And it seems like Georgia's starting to evolve with football as far as like seeing what Todd Monken did with a quarterback that can really get the ball down the field. I think had to be encouraging to Georgia fans who have been concerned that Georgia's not going to take that next step. But Davin, I know you're a busy guy, and we appreciate you taking a moment of your time post-meeting today to talk to Dog fans and catch us up on your life and career, as well as to just talk some Georgia football. So we're looking forward to next steps for you, and we'll be pulling for you on the field. Any last thoughts for Georgia fans?
I miss you guys, and I love you guys, and I want to say thank you for my 5 years there, and go Dogs, man. You know, I don't do a lot of interviews. I had to do one for my boy, man.
Yeah, well, that's big time, Davin. I appreciate it, and we are very much looking forward to seeing you on Sundays very soon. So thank you again.
No doubt, man. Thank you. I'll be a dog till I die.
All right, now frequent guest of the show, Corey Amick, returns. Corey, welcome back.
Hey, Doug. It's nice to celebrate a 400-yard passing game.
We've been waiting for this. I think in the years that you've been doing this with me, like, this is kind of what we dream of. unfortunately, it may be too late for this year at least, but, man, it was nice to see JT out there doing his thing.
I think it's weird for me because I was raised a Tennessee fan, really was a Tennessee fan until I went to Georgia, and so missed most of the Aaron Murray era, and that was the last time that UGA fans saw a quarterback, you know, wearing red and black though for 400 yards. So, I mean, this is really like my first ever experience.
Yeah, it's been 7 years. It feels like an eternity, but it was nice to see. Just like quick thoughts on that game. Defense was disappointing, although I wasn't that surprise given the absences of Jordan Davis and LeCount, but I feel like Georgia can't use that as an excuse moving forward because those are guys that are not going to be there next year. So at least Richard LeCount, and so it's like we got to start building for next season on defense as well.
Yeah, I think it's disappointing to have that be, you know, the first effort from our secondary following the Florida game. Like, you think this is the game where they can come out and prove that, you know, we can stop the pass and we can at least, you know, slow a team down. And we didn't really get beat over the top once. It was just, we decided we were going to, you know, let them kind of dink and dunk down the field, and they did. But they were able to put it in the end zone. So at a certain point, you know, whether it's adjustments or whether it's just lack of execution, you know, they still put up over 200 yards in the air in the first half. So.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie though. There was a part of me watching that game, like when Mississippi State had the ball, and I kind of wanted them to keep it a game. And I know this sounds terrible. I should want Georgia to just run away with it. But it was so fun to watch us pass it. And it was like, man, if Mississippi State scores here, then we're probably going to have to be aggressive on offense on the other side of the ball. I know I'm not the only one that felt that way. So, and hey, we came out with a win. It's all good. So don't get all mad at me if you're listening to the show. But Corey, let's transition here to the pick six segment. I think, you know, much has been discussed about JT Daniels and the performance he had. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, time will tell if he's like the guy, and also the whole debate as to whether he should be able to play or should have played sooner. At the end of the day, we all know that's not going to change. We don't really know exactly what his condition was or how he was performing in practice. His family, in their Dog Nation interview or whatever, seemed to indicate that they were pleased with the way things went, as far as Kirby being patient and keeping the kids safe. So at the end of the day, it is what it is. We got to move on. Pick six. Corey, a tremendous comeback last week. Tremendous. So I did this whole thing. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to let Corey like make it a little competitive. And all of a sudden, it's 33-32. So Corey's a lot better at picking
whether a game is going to happen or not due to COVID than I am. So, Corey, you actually have a shot to take the lead this week. We're going to do the same thing we did last week. It's a pick six, but really it's two pick sixes because we're picking whether the game happens and then who wins the game. So, Corey, we'll start with number 15, Ohio State, playing on the road at Texas. Number 20, is Texas back?
So this is Iowa State versus Texas, right? This one.
Yes. What did I say?
You said Ohio State, which would be a great game.
That would be so fun. Yeah. No, but, Iowa State. Yeah.
That was taking me back to like the, you know, Mack Brown, Jim Tressel days when those two teams were constantly.
I forgot about
four.
Jim Tressel. Yeah.
I know. So, okay. Iowa State, Texas. I'm going to go, yes, the game happens. And I'm going to say Texas upsets Iowa State, although I don't really think it's that much of an upset. I think my coaching prediction of the week is that Matt Campbell is going to go to Nebraska, just knowing that Scott Frost hasn't worked out there so far. And so I think Iowa State loses this game. Iowa State's not thrilled with Matt Campbell. Nebraska is not thrilled with Scott Frost. And so it kind of, this is one of those games that lead to the coaching transition of next season. So I'm going with Hook'em Horns, and that the game will happen.
Yeah, I actually have Hook'em Horns as well, and I'm saying the game happens as well. So we got the same pick there. Senior day for Sam Ellinger, the man who infamously claimed that Texas was back after beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl a few years back. I think he goes out with a win here at home. Next game, this one's a pretty interesting one. Number 2, Notre Dame, playing on the road at number 25, UNC. UNC's got a gunslinger at QB, a guy who might be a number one pick next year, in Sam Howell. And obviously Notre Dame's a team that's on a roll, coming off a win over Clemson and feeling like they can make the playoff.
Yeah, this one, I'm going with Notre Dame, and a part of me believes like they're going to like win out, go to the playoff, and then get like waxed by, you know, the a rematch with Clemson or an Ohio State matchup or a Bama matchup. But there's something in me that says like this is going to be that one odd year where since there's an asterisk, Notre Dame is going to like prove they belong, and then we're going to have to deal with it for the next like decade.
See, I was hoping it would be Georgia, like the asterisk year would be Georgia's year where it's like, oh, things are already fluky, why don't Georgia just go ahead and win a championship? Doesn't look like that's happening. Yeah. Honestly, I'm here for it. Their fans are great, so I wouldn't be that mad about it. Man, I really wanted to go with UNC here, though. I felt like, man, they got that aerial attack. I feel like Notre Dame is, every year, there's like one team that they should beat that they lose to. And I feel like this could be the game at UNC. You know, UNC hasn't played to their potential this year, but maybe they do in this one, or at least not consistently. But then I looked and I saw, or I guess I was reminded that UNC lost to FSU and UVA, which is pretty bad for a top 25 team. And then in their most recent game, they won 59-53 against Wake Forest. So I saw that. I think that's what did it for me. The 59-53 win over Wake Forest. That's where I was like, all right, UNC is not going to beat Notre Dame this year. So yeah, I'm picking Notre Dame too. Do you think the game happens?
Yes. I think I haven't had any major things come up with these schools with, like, they haven't had any games postponed. And if they had, it wasn't due to them. So I'm going to go to this game does happen.
Yeah. I'm saying the same. Okay. Maryland at number 12, Indiana. We got Talia Tungavailoa. We got Indiana coming off a loss to Ohio State, although a respectable 7-point loss, I believe.
Yeah.
Corey, does this one happen, and who's your winner?
Oh, every week I pick against Indiana. It's just part of my personality now. I'm going to say the game doesn't happen. I think it's going to be something with Maryland, but I'm going to say the game doesn't happen. But if it does, Maryland wins, and Maryland has my names of the week. Two backup linebackers. First one is Fanaji Gote, which is just a phenomenal name. So Fanaji Gote. And then the next one, which I think is like, this guy needs to open up either like a sub shop or something in the tech industry, but his name is Ruben Hippolyte or Hypolite the second. So it's, his last name is Hypolite. So it just sounds like, you know, he's upgrading something. And the fact that he's the second is even better.
He's the light version of someone else.
Yeah. So I'm going Maryland, and the game doesn't happen.
Corey, I am kind of curious. So how many of your name of the week guys have actually like made any contributions this season? Is it always just some obscure guy off the bench?
Last week, Kobe Bryant was a starting defensive back. And I mean, he got burned every single play, I would say that he at least played some role in the game for Cincinnati.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're a playoff contender right now. So
yeah.
after a close win over UCF. So anyway, yeah, I'm saying this game does happen and I'm picking Indiana to right the ship. I kind of wanted to pick Maryland because I like Talia. And I don't think Indiana's as good as their record. But yeah. With that said, I ended up picking the game to happen. So this is the game. This game could be the difference maker as far as, like, do I pull further ahead or do you come back? Next one, number 11, Northwestern. That's a very 2020 thing to say. Number 11, Northwestern at unranked Michigan State.
Yeah, I think this game for me, if the game is played any time before 3 p.m., I'm taking mm-hmm. Northwestern just because they're the kings of the noon kickoff game where the rest of the nation is still kind of waking up. And then just the fact that this team, if Pat Fitzgerald's been Northwestern for so long, and to see them finally be ranked in the top 25 or top 15 now, I think it's rewarding for him and the way that he's committed to this organization. So I'm going to go Northwestern wins, and I'm going to say the game does happen.
Yeah, I got the same exact thing. I wanted to go with Coach Tucker, Michigan State, mm-hmm. but I looked, and their only top 25 opponent so far was Indiana, and they lost that game 24-0. So, yeah, the win over Michigan may not have been as good of a win as it seemed, and I'm going with Northwestern here to keep their playoff hopes alive. What a sentence to say. Also, a weird thing is Auburn playing Alabama this week, the Iron Bowl, not the last week of the season. Number 22, Auburn, who's much improved seemingly since their loss to Georgia, playing at number one Alabama, who also to me somehow seems to have improved even after losing Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, so it's funny looking at this game because no way, especially in an even year, like, you can never count Auburn out of this game. Just knowing how it always works, and I mean, it's just like Auburn always has a chance to win this game, no matter how good or bad they are. But I think Alabama, this is the year where, like, all the bad juju is thrown out, and like a better team just beats an inferior team. And so I think the game is played. I think the SEC for the most part has done a good job, and I think neither of these teams have had too many issues with it. So I think Bama wins. I'm going to say they win big, but the game does happen.
Okay. Yeah. Part of me wants to pick this game not to happen because, like, that would be, like, on the list of wild things to happen. If this game didn't happen, there probably wouldn't be an Iron Bowl this year, right? Because the SEC championship, they're running out of weeks. And so, like, how 2020 would it be for there to not be an Iron Bowl? That would be nuts. And I kind of want to pick that to happen. But also, I'm in Alabama right now, and there's, like, no regard for the coronavirus in the state of Alabama. And especially with these two football programs and how important football is to them, like, I swear half the team could have it and, like, they would keep it on lockdown and just play the game and everybody gets sick. Like, I just can't imagine them not letting a game happen. I think it would be hilarious, but I'm going to say it happens if for no other reason than the fact that I think both schools would, like, break the rules to play this game. And then I'm also going with Alabama. I think, Auburn won this game last year against Mac Jones, but Auburn's defense is so much worse than they were. Tank Bigsby's banged up right now. Don't really know what his status is, but it's the classic Auburn situation. They get one good guy and they just run him into the ground until he's hurt by the time they play Alabama. It was like Kerryon Johnson a couple years ago. So, I mean, poor Tank Bigsby. I think he's going to be that guy for the next 3 years. Yeah, I'm going with Bama here. Okay, last one in the pick six, LSU, unranked LSU, who beat Arkansas, surprisingly, which is also a weird thing to say, playing at number 5, Texas A&M. Texas A&M to me is not as good as their record or like as good as their ranking. Like, I feel like they're overrated and I feel like they're not that good. And I might even take Georgia against them. But they're pretty good at home, though, I will say. You know, they got that crowd that really shook Florida. LSU, like, LSU's improved over the season, no doubt. Like, they've come a long way since losing a couple games bad early in Missouri and you know, that opening Mississippi State game.
Yeah, I'm going with A&M. I think both teams are going to score a lot of points. And if you look at the last few games A&M played, they had the bye week and then, you know, the Ole Miss game postponed last Saturday. But, like, they, you know, handed South Carolina a huge loss with 48-3. But, like, Arkansas, you know, they won 42-31. And I think that's a good game to use as a reference point of, mm-hmm. you know, Arkansas probably should have beat LSU. They had the blocked field goal that, you know, hurt them late.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good representation of how this game goes as well. So I think it's going to be a score like that where, you know, A&M puts up 40-something and LSU will probably put up high 20s, low 30s. But I think A&M wins, and then I'm going to say this game does happen.
Yeah, same as me. Great minds think alike here. I think if A&M's going to get upset, this is going to be the game. Like, LSU's long overdue for, like, a win against a good team. Like a ranked team, and Coach O, like, I'm sure he has his guys still bought in and stuff just because he's Coach O, and LSU's got a lot of talent, and like their new QB looks at least decent. Like, he definitely looked pretty good against Arkansas last week. So I think they can make it a game, and I don't think this isn't like the typical top five team versus an unranked team. Like, LSU's not that much less talented than A&M right now, and they're starting to come along. But also, I ended up picking A&M because LSU loses every other week. They're like, they win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game. One last week, they're going to lose this one. That's just, I don't know. That's probably not really how it works, but that's how I'm picking it. Okay, extra point. Georgia, number 13, Georgia, which feels about right as far as their ranking, playing on the road at USC Junior, unranked, without their two starting corners, without their head coach from earlier in the season. Revenge game for Georgia. We're doing, obviously, we're picking whether the game happens and then scores here. So,
yeah.
Corey, I'll go ahead and say mine. I say it does happen, although the most Georgia thing would be for this game not to happen. Like, we finally get a quarterback that we're excited about, and then, like, the rest of our games get canceled. I could see that happening because we're Georgia, but I'm saying it happens just because I haven't heard any rumblings as far as COVID goes at this point in the week, and it's Tuesday we're recording this. And I'm taking Georgia. I'm saying we finally get over the 40 mark. I'm taking 45-17.
I like it. I think we're going to not only have to put up points, but I think South Carolina is going to use the same blueprint that Mississippi State used, and they're just going to pack the box and say, you know, beat us with the pass, and I think we can.
Now we actually
will.
Can.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to go, I'll say game does happen. I say we win 38 to 14. And I think I'm being generous with how great I think our defense is going to bounce back. But I do think that, like, back-to-back games with performances like that in the secondary, I think Kirby and Dan Lanning are going to, you know, scheme a lot better in the game and be able to – I think South Carolina relies a lot more on the deep ball. And I think we'll be better. I think we can honestly defend the deep ball better than we can, like, the underneath passes that just slowly –
yeah.
You know, get the team down the field.
And
but I think
Bobo,
we give up a few scores, but we'd be fine.
Yeah, and Bobo's a lot more conservative. Like, I feel like Kirby's defenses do really well against teams that, like, play not to lose. You know, we just don't give them anything. But it's the more aggressive passing teams that we struggle against, and I don't really see, like, Colin Hill and Mike Bobo as, like, this, like, scary passing attack that I'm really concerned about. So, I'm saying 45-17. You got 38-14. A couple thoughts on this one before we wrap up. JT Daniels, like, what a perfect time for him to come in against an undermanned Mississippi State team that's packing the box and daring us to throw it downfield. And then now going against a USC junior team that is without its two stud starting corners. Like, perfect storm for him. I do worry a little bit that Georgia fans are going to overhype JT. You know, we got to just be patient with the kid. I mean, he's coming off of ACL. Yeah, he balled out this week, but, like, he had some underthrown balls that, you know, we got a little bit lucky on. He definitely had a could have been or should have been pick early in the game. He's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of upside. He brings a lot of things to the table that we haven't seen in a while. But, like, let's not declare this man Joe Burrow just yet. Let's see how he does. This is great for him to kind of get his feet wet playing against maybe some undermanned teams in Mississippi State and USC Junior. But, like, even if he dominates those, doesn't mean he's going to dominate Alabama next year or whatever. Like, we gotta have fair expectations for these kids and not expect more out of them than we should. But, like I said, at the same time, like, we haven't seen a guy with the potential he has in quite some time, and you do have to kind of enjoy it while it lasts at Georgia. It's like, oh, we got a quarterback that can throw the ball. Let's have fun with it. So I think JT's emergence last week, like, revitalized the season a little bit. I think there was the feeling after the Florida game that, like, the season doesn't really matter anymore. Like, we're not going anywhere. Like, it's basically all exhibition games. To now, it's like, man, if JT can build this offense with young receivers, you know, Jermaine Burton, Pickens, a lot of those guys out there, Darnell Washington, John Fitzpatrick, yeah, like, they could get some big momentum going into next year. Maybe some, and Davin mentioned this earlier, maybe some of the guys that are thinking about going pro look at this team and decide, hey, maybe we could do something special. Maybe we give it another year. And so I do think these last couple of weeks are actually important for Georgia. I think from a recruiting perspective, like, showcasing last week, like, hey, we throw it downfield when we have a quarterback that can, and we want quarterbacks that can. We also want receivers that want to go get it. I think it's huge for recruiting. I really do. I think it's huge for momentum going into next year. So, yeah, like I said, I think, like, JT's emergence has revitalized this season, given that Georgia's already out of, like, a national championship chase this year.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Just the excitement around, what could this team look like? You know, it's like, yeah, seeing it happen against a team like Mississippi State. Like, we know we have all the pieces. And then JT said it himself, like, you know, if you're not going to use these guys at wide receiver, like, don't recruit them. And I think that was spot on. I think that's gonna resonate through, you know, guys who are thinking about coming to UGA going forward, is if we have the right guy in the system, and, you know, obviously we're going to have the talent around, and, you know, with Kirby at the helm, like, we have the ability to have, you know, an exciting offense where we can still, you know, we'll still be a run first team, but we at least have the capability to put the ball in the air and to have the big plays. And I think that will, you know, transform how teams prepare to play us. And I think it just opens up, you know, it just makes everything a lot easier for everyone, as well as takes pressure off the defense. So, yeah, I'm excited. I think it is, you know, whether or not he has another week where he surpasses 400 yards and, you know, if it was almost 75% of his passes, who knows? But regardless, the fact that he's able to start making these connections now, like you said, with the younger guys and, you know, with guys like Dominique Blaylock coming back next year, it's definitely, it's exciting to know there's a lot of promise, regardless of how good any quarterback coming in next year is. And just knowing that we have a guy that has the talent, and, you know, once he's fully recovered and is comfortable in the system with our guys, with Todd Monken, like, we could have something special.
Yeah, I agree. Especially looking at that receiver room, if you add in a guy like Blaylock, a guy like Rosamy, assuming he gets healthy, which is maybe not a fair assumption. I don't know. We'll see how he recovers. That was a nasty injury that he suffered. I mean, Blaylock is coming off some tough, you know, two ACLs. So, but if those guys are playing at a high level, add that to Pickens and Burton and Washington and Fitzpatrick, as well as some of these receivers that haven't seen the field yet. Justin Robinson is the one I've been excited about. I know people are excited about Arian Smith, Micaiah Tong. I mean, they could end up with a really elite passing attack all of a sudden and become a passing team, which is exciting for Georgia fans because it's felt like we're so far off from that. And then all of a sudden you look at things and you're like, man, we, you know, next year we could be one of the better passing teams in the SEC if keep going on the trajectory we're on. So exciting times for Georgia fans. Yeah. I'm looking forward to some football on Saturday. Obviously, with it being Thanksgiving, it just feels right. Just like football and Thanksgiving go hand in hand. Lots of food and lots of football. So, Corey, appreciate you taking a moment out of your Thanksgiving week to join us on the show, and we wish you a happy Thanksgiving to our listeners. Appreciate you listening to the show on your Thanksgiving week. Please subscribe, like us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or follow us on those. And don't forget to retweet the episode on Twitter for your chance at free Chick-fil-A. We'll do another show next week. And then I guess that next week will be Missouri. I think we're going to – I didn't really publicize the Jeb Blazevich game after – or episode after that one got – deleted, so we'll probably redo the Mizzou one like with him, but then me and Corey again doing something new. So anyway, that's kind of the schedule moving forward, but again, appreciate y'all listening, and go Dawgs.